The vibration of change, that magical place where life shifts from struggle to ease, from stagnation to forward movement, from old ways of being to new ways of becoming. Yes, it can seem rather elusive to get there, but when you are in it, you feel it down to your very core, and it can positively affect everything in your life, from your relationships to your health and well-being, from your career path to your abundance, from the quality of your inner connection to the fullness of your self-expression. Here on the Christine Upchurch Show, we explore ways to get into that vibration of change with experts in the fields of consciousness, psychology, spirituality, health, healing, and science. Are you ready to step into your vibration of change?
Welcome, everybody. You might be listening live on 1150 AM KKNW in the Seattle area, or perhaps you're watching live on Transformation Talk Radio on Facebook or Christine Upchurch professional page on Facebook. You might be listening after the fact on one of the dozens of podcasts that ends up. Whenever and wherever you're joining us from, we're very grateful to have you here. And I think you're going to be grateful as well. And my cat Indy just made some sounds, so I think she's grateful that you're here as well. I'm looking forward to our conversation today with a guest who I will introduce in a minute. It's very interesting because she was mentored by one of the most high-profile, famous CEOs ever, and she's moved on to share her wisdom that she got from that with others, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that and let her tell you about that. But first, I want to say hello to Benny Mathers at KKNW. Hi, Benny.
Hi, Christine. Hope you're having a glorious day.
Yeah, it's nice. I'm hoping for some sunshine, but I looked at the 10-day forecast here, and it's not so looking so great for the Seattle area.
Well, your smile can part those clouds, so you think about that one.
Oh, thank you, Benny. And good morning, Olivia.
Good morning, Christine.
Nice to have you here, and I know you're suffering through the rain as well.
You know, we're getting a little sunshine up here right now, but I don't trust it to last very long. So,
well, you know, I used to love it when I traveled around the world to teach because, you know, you get up above the clouds, you get sunshine into the airplane, you know, there was,
yeah.
But I miss that. And I'm hoping that we can get back to that normal sometime soon. I'm really happy to have our guest here today. Her name is Naz Beheshti, and she's the author of Pause, Breathe, Choose, Becoming the CEO of Your Well-Being. She's an executive wellness coach, a speaker, Forbes contributor, and CEO founder of Prananaz. I love that. A corporate wellness company improving leadership effectiveness, employee engagement and well-being, company culture, and business outcomes. Clients include Nike, JP Morgan, Chase, Omega Institute, UCSF, Columbia University, and Stanford. She also co-founded Rise to Shine, a nonprofit organization helping to alleviate the suffering of young children in Haiti. She lives in New York City with her husband. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Naz Beheshti. Hi, Naz.
Hi, Christine.
I hope I'm pronouncing your name right.
Oh, you pronounced it perfectly. Thank you.
So I think it's really fascinating where you got your start. Can you share with our listeners about your experience with this very well-known CEO? And
you froze. I did not hear your last part. Sorry.
That's quite all right. I wanted you to tell us a little bit about who it was who mentored you so early on and some of the things that you learned from him.
So my first boss, a mentor, as you mentioned, it was Steve Jobs, and it was my first job out of college working at Apple as his executive assistant. Uh-huh. So I really learned so much from him. Mostly it was him that inspired me to really follow my heart and discover first my passion and my purpose, and then not just discover it, but then pursue it. And I feel so fortunate and grateful to have found and pursued my passion and purpose and really live it every day, because oftentimes people find or are able to understand and know what their passion and purpose is, but they don't pursue it. They don't do anything about it. But mm-hmm. Steve truly gave me the courage to follow my heart and intuition and start my own company in a nascent market, and really think outside the box to be able to start my own company, Prananaz.
So this sounds a little counterintuitive. You're working for somebody who probably really appreciates the job you're doing, and yet he's mentoring you to move on. Can you tell us a little bit about that? You know, we have a certain perspective on Steve Jobs based on what we hear in the public eye, but you had personal interaction with him. Tell us a little bit about why he was supporting you in moving forward.
Well, back then, I didn't know what my purpose and passion was. So he wasn't actually telling me to move on. It was through his example of leading Apple with so much passion and purpose and saying all the time that, you know, the way you do great work is to love what you do. And he embodied, you know, how passionate he was for building Apple to be the successful company that it is today. And he also taught me that being well goes hand in hand with doing well, because he really prioritized his self-care and invested in his well-being. So in order to be well or do well, you need to be well. And that is a really important lesson that he taught me.
And, you know, again, that's another counterintuitive thing for many people who are immersed in the so-called rat race. Many people's perspective on how you succeed, you put in really long hours, you kind of devote your myopic focus to your career at the expense of the balance in your life. But you're saying that what you learned based on Steve Jobs, as well as what you learn and teach now as a coach, is that it's really important to have the balance. Why is that?
Well, because if we're just focused on our career and working so hard and such long hours and letting our self-care go by the wayside, what is giving you energy and like able, like clear mind to make good decisions, the energy to perform at your best? What is giving you that, you know, energy to thrive and be at your best if you're not taking care of yourself? So in order to have high performance, you need to take care of yourself. You need to, you know, sleep at least 7 to 8 hours a day, eat healthily to energize you and nourish yourself, exercise. I always encourage a meditation practice, some sort of mindfulness practice to be mindful, clear-headed, grounded, and centered, along with having strong relationships and having time for yourself and away from work, and really just being able to show up as your best self in all areas of your life, not just work.
So you consult with some of the big corporations in our country, and you're talking about mindfulness, which I find fascinating. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about what mindfulness has to do with business?
Well, it's funny, when I started my business about almost a decade ago, mindfulness was not as mainstream and people were still not used to understanding or experiencing the value that mindfulness practice can bring to work and to life. Now it's more mainstream in that people understand that when you're mindful and put some time aside throughout the day, preferably first thing in the morning, if you can, to really ground yourself and center yourself, you're able to hit the ground running and be more productive and be more like level-headed, clear-minded. I know my mindfulness practice has completely transformed my life in that I'm less reactive. I see solutions to problems much easier. I make better decisions because I'm more mindful of it. It's like woken me up out of autopilot. So that also helps in decision-making and just work in general. And it also has a whole host of benefits for your health and your well-being. And so all of that helps you perform better at work.
Yeah. And I think about, you know, examples. For instance, if I'm in a working relationship with somebody and they say something that triggers me, and they're you know, trying to contribute something, but they're triggering me. If I'm aware that I'm getting triggered, then I can kind of detach from that and then hear from more of the observer perspective what it is they're offering. And so I can imagine that mindfulness is helpful for taking positive criticism and interacting with business colleagues differently.
Absolutely. It truly helps like be more, like I said, reactive, right? So rather than reacting to that colleague who's triggering you, you're able to mindfully like take a pause, take a breath and like respond rather than react in a triggered way, because that's counterproductive. You're not going to want to, you're not going to get much resolution if you're reacting rather than responding wisely.
Right. Right. So what does breath have to do with it?
Well, breathing, the part of the pause, breathe, choose method allows you to, when you take a mindful breath, it just feels so good and you relax instantly and you re-engage with the present moment when you're breathing mindfully. I mean, we're breathing all day and night, but most of the time unconsciously, it's just keeping us alive.
Right.
But when we pause to take a mindful breath, we are no longer thinking about the past or the future or you know, building more anxiety or stress. We're focused on our breath. So just breathing alone, just the oxygen going to our brain helps mitigate the stress and relaxes you. Uh-huh. And then that breath better equips you to make a mindful choice, a better choice, because you're present. You're not on autopilot.
So do you find that when people become more mindful that it causes big shifts, that they either are welcoming immediately or perhaps they're finding themselves having to make choices that they're afraid of?
Either way, I find that's a positive, because yeah. If you want to make a choice, if you're kind of forced or want to make a choice that you're afraid of, that promotes evolution and growth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, facing those fears is actually, to me, a positive thing. And so either way, I actually have not found a reason not to be mindful or have a mindfulness practice that would not benefit you. But if right. you, I welcome anyone who does, because I'm always curious about that, but I truly only see benefits to that. And, you know, if it's going to bring up things from the past, then great, you're dealing with it, right? Then you can yes. move forward instead of it letting it be bottled inside you.
Yeah. And I think that, And I speak from experience, past experience, that when we become more mindful, then we have to pay attention to what is, what truly is within us, whether it's how we feel in a relationship or a job, how something isn't satisfying us anymore that will require change. And I think that for many of us, that can be terrifying.
Absolutely. I mean, this pandemic alone, having couples be forced to be together 24/7, I have seen with my clients, with friends, family members, I've seen that unfortunately things that have been able to be pushed to the side or brushed under the rug for years and years because everyone was going about their day and spending the majority of their time at work has now come to surface because you're in close proximity all day, every day. And so you become mindful, whether you want to or not, even if you don't have right. a mindfulness practice, it's in your face. It's hard uh-huh. to avoid and it surfaces and then sometimes not for the best. And uh-huh. it ends up, you know, really people have been realizing, waking up to, wow, this relationship needs work or this relationship is no longer serving me. And I've uh-huh. actually, unfortunately had, I mean, maybe not unfortunately, maybe it's for the best. Everything happens for a reason, but people have been splitting up as a result because people are waking up to realize that they're no longer happy because it's so in their face now. I mean, it's everything's coming up.
So what's the connection between mindfulness and authenticity?
Well, when we have a mindfulness practice and when we take mindfulness into our day and carry it with us, we're able to access our authentic self because there's no more like filters. There's no more like autopilot. We are truly accessing our deepest, truest self. And so in my experience, mindfulness is really the key to discovering your authentic self. Because all that chatter and all that chaos above that is kind of on the surface in our mind quiets down. And then when you're mindful, your heart and your mind are aligned. And I feel like your true self and essence is in your heart. And so then you're able to hear your heart and respond to your heart in alignment with your mind. They're aligned rather than just living up here in kind of the chaos. You drop in to your authentic self.
Yeah, I love that. So you talk a lot about stress and you were talking about it here in this conversation. What are the different types of stress and is all stress bad?
No, absolutely not. There is one type of stress. There's three types of stress. I use an ACE acronym. A is for acute stress, which is a short-term necessary stress, which is also often referred to as a fight or flight response. It's a necessary short-term stress. There is chronic stress, which that is the most terrible stress. It's a long-term stress, about greater than 6 months, where you feel hopeless and helpless and have unresolved issues. And that is continuous and can be really a killer stress and is linked to a lot of disease. Mm-hmm. And then the good stress is eustress. And eustress gives you energy to, you know, thrive in like situations where you're doing, for example, a competitive challenge or like you're about to go on stage and speak, for example, and you might be really nervous but you switch that nerves to excitement. And that's like a good stress because you get excited. And it's like that energy that kind of keeps you going through a good challenge or like, you know, it's short term and it's a positive stress that gives you energy.
And I had never heard that word before. And for our viewers and listeners, it's E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S. I had to look it up in the dictionary, but that makes perfect sense because there are situations where if you are feeling stressed, you feel it in your palms are sweating, you know, and you feel a little tightening in the throat, heart may be racing, and yet you're about to do something really great, you know, go out on a date, get up on stage, you know, whatever it is that has you excited, that feels stressful, but it is a positive stress.
It is.
So with chronic stress, what are some of the tools we can use in order to be beyond mindfulness to mitigate that?
Well, so it's also a lot of stress starts with our mindset. So it's really about our perception of like a demand or event. It's not the actual demand or event that's stressful. It's how we perceive it.
Right.
So that's why I love pause, breathe, choose, because we could choose to kind of toggle between acute stress and eustress, which are the two, you know, positive stresses, then necessary and positive stress, and avoid the trap or pit of chronic stress, which really, like I mentioned, is, you know, a longer term stress over 6 months. And really how it's characterized is feeling helpless and hopeless, and having unresolved issues. So the way you can mitigate that is to choose to resolve those issues in whatever way that, you know, you can, rather than being in a disempowered state of just saying, this is my situation, I can't do anything about it. Even if you can't physically do something about it and it is what it is and you can't change the situation, you could change your mindset around it so that killer chronic stress doesn't like intoxicate you know, because it's very so again, it goes back to your perception and mindset. So it's about, you know, acing stress using the ACE method, and you know, that's three steps. Acing stress using the ACE method starts with action. Like, well, first it's identifying what type of stress it is, you know, it starts with awareness of that type of stress between the three steps. And then it's ACE is for change, making that change. The C stands for change, changing that mindset from a disempowered mindset to a more empowering mindset. And then the E would stand for taking empowered action to shift either the mindset or your situation or environment, whatever the case is. Right. But you're able to ACE stress through awareness, change, and empowerment, empowered action.
Yeah, love that, love that. You were talking a minute ago about how toxic chronic stress is. In what way is it toxic?
Well, for one, the cortisol levels are toxic. The hormone in your body that produces stress is cortisol. And having too much of that could actually promote dis-ease in your body. And so the five leading causes of death in the U.S. are linked to chronic stress. So you don't...
Wow. The top five are linked to chronic stress.
That's why managing stress and building resilience is so critical. And most of my workshops for corporate wellness are all about just that, stress management and resilience building. It really is a killer, what I call a killer stress.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I know that you teach this within the context of corporations. I can see how it helps the individual, right? To lead a more balanced life, to be more mindful, to align with authenticity, to reduce stress. How can it help the organization?
In so many ways, because well-being and success are intricately connected. So well-being drives success. And if I had a one-liner to say, what Steve taught me is that well-being drives success. He embodied it. He proved it. I mean, he was evident of that. Uh-huh. And so when employees are happy and healthy, they are more engaged and motivated. They naturally have greater job satisfaction and a sense of purpose and intrinsic motivation, which drives high performance. And on the flip side, the employer benefits because they benefit from improved productivity and employee engagement. And employee well-being, which in turn helps with company culture, making it a stronger company culture and community. So it's really a win-win for the employee and the employer.
That makes sense. We're going to go to a quick break, but stay tuned for more, folks, with Naz Beheshti.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Are you feeling the complexity of life? Do you feel that urge to step into something greater? Tune in to Nailed It Radio. Find your simplicity within your complexity with me, life coach Carrie Nail. Tune in each month on transformationtalkradio.com to discover what it means to use your full power to be the best version of yourself. Imagine stepping into the energy of saying yes to yourself and knowing you nailed it. For more information about me, visit carrienail.com.
The vibration of change. That magical place where life shifts from struggle to ease, from stagnation to forward movement, from old ways of being to new ways of becoming. If you're like I am, it can be rather elusive to get there, but when you are in it, you feel it down to your very core, don't you? And it can positively affect everything in your life, from your relationships to your health and well-being, from your career path to your abundance. From the quality of that inner connection to the fullness of your self-expression. On the Christine Upchurch Show, we explore ways to get into that vibration of change with experts in the fields of consciousness, psychology, spirituality, health, healing, and science. Join me, Christine Upchurch, every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on KKNW AM 1150 and Transformation Talk Radio, and learn new ways to step into your vibration of change. I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. As a former research statistician, my scientific background is what many would call sensible. For more than a decade now, I have been working in the field of energy medicine, facilitating sessions and teaching around the world. People from the mainstream often ask me, how did a sensible woman like you end up working in such an alternative field? Implicit in their question is the underlying assumption that the field of subtle energy, such as energy healing and intuition, isn't sensible. But I believe it is very sensible. Even scientists are able to measure aspects of this. Approaching life from an energetic perspective brings us new opportunity for healing and transformation. And from a practical standpoint, even if you can't rationally explain how something works, if you experience a shift from it, then doesn't it make it pretty sensible? Please visit stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on 1150 AM KKNW, TransformationTalkRadio.com, and Facebook Live. Folks, you can find us over on my professional page. Okay, I'm talking to Naz Beheshti, and she's the author of Pause, Breathe, Choose. Become the CEO of your well-being. And as I know that we have plenty of listeners who aren't thrilled with their current jobs, or they're happy enough with their job or their career, but they feel like there's this inner yearning, this calling of their soul that is inviting them to move in a different direction. What kind of advice do you have for people who are thinking about changing careers?
Well, for the people who are unhappy and don't know where they want to go next, I highly encourage you to take explorative action. And what that means is stepping outside of your comfort zone, the place that you live without fear, stepping outside of it. I know it's a little bit scary, but that's where most growth and knowledge appears, right? Wisdom, you learn more about yourself and your authentic self and what you want and what your purpose is. So taking explorative action would be one way to learn. And this could be anything from, learning something new, finding like a new hobby or learning a new language or, taking a path less traveled. Like if you go on regular walks and you follow a certain path and go a different route. You never know what you're going to run into or who you're going to run into.
And Joe Dispenza, Dr. Joe Dispenza talks about how if you do things differently than your normal routine, it creates new neural pathways in the brain, which of course can have its effect on not only how you perceive the world, but what it is you manifest from the world.
Exactly. And also sometimes we just get too comfortable in our regular routines and that can become stagnant, right? And so we want new experiences, especially if we want to change our jobs or our career path. Like this is a good way to kind of test the waters and just start small by trying new small things out that is different instead of like changing everything all at once. Right. And for the people who know the direction they want to go and they just are comfortable, I was there. I was working in a pharmaceutical company, cush job, great benefits, great pay. They called it the golden handcuffs. Like I was handcuffed but I was unfulfilled. It was great in the beginning, but then I was unfulfilled. I wanted to pursue then my passion and purpose, and it was scary to just like leave something so comfortable to start something from scratch on my own, not knowing how it's going to go. But I would say, feel the fear and do it anyway. Because I did. I felt the fear. It was not easy. I'm not going to lie and say, just do it and it'll be great. No, it is scary. But would you rather be in a position that is not fulfilling and not meaningful, or be a little bit scared, jump over that, hoop, like just get over that fear and get to the other side where the opportunity and potential of being more fulfilled is waiting right there for you.
You know, I think that, although on some level, I think people crave change, think that most people delude themselves into thinking that they want things to stay the same because that's comfortable. What are the indications that what we view as comfort is really stagnation?
When there isn't any more joy and meaning in your actions and in your experiences, that would be a very good indicator. If it becomes dull and you're bored and you don't find yourself smiling or laughing or have this like energy and engagement in you, like, are you engaged in your daily to-dos and work?
Right.
Or are you disengaged? Are you happy? You know, but comfort does bring a sense of happiness to some people because they're scared to go outside of that, right? Because they don't know what's on the other side. I mean, this is why the pandemic has been so stressful, because people don't know what's on the other side or how it's going to, what's going to happen to them, their family, their loved ones, their finances, everything, the world economy. So the thing is that you just have to take the chance and weigh out your options. What's better, like here where you're not so happy, or the potential to be happy? And there's no, and one thing I do want to preface is, like, there's no guarantee that the grass is always greener on the other side. However, will you feel at the end, you know, later, will you have regrets for not trying? And just because the grass is not greener on the other side doesn't mean you can't find another route. Like, maybe that's not the right path, but maybe that will lead you to the right path. So in my professional experience, my route was pretty messy and like all over the place. I didn't go just like from Steve Jobs to my passion and purpose. No, I worked in many companies for a decade and learned so much in each stop. And in hindsight, when I look back and connect the dots, all of it served a purpose and it helped me get to where I am. So maybe that next stop, even though it's not your final destination or purpose, is going to help you get to where you want to be.
I think that we will get information regardless of whether the choice we make lead us to what we really want or not. So it's almost like you never get that information or have the potential for that expansion and joy if you don't take the opportunity. I'm always saying that it's the missed opportunities that we end up regretting.
Exactly. And that is the exact reason why I left my job, because I did not want to regret not trying to start my own business and pursue my passion and purpose, because I was too comfortable or I was scared to do it, to try. That would have been my biggest regret, and I'd rather not have regrets.
Okay, so you're doing this coaching, you're teaching workshops. What inspired you to write the book?
Well, so for so long, I had clients always asking me if I had a book, or that they wanted my tools and strategies in a book format so that they can, you know, look at something and have something in between our sessions. I never did. I never thought I'd be a writer. I just didn't have time. But one night, I remember so vividly, on February 14, 2014, Steve Jobs appeared in my dream.
And this is after he'd passed away, right?
Yes. This was a few years after he had passed away. And I am known for having vivid dreams. I'm a vivid dreamer. But in my dreams, I never see faces of people. I know who they are, but I don't see their face vividly. Like, I can remember it vividly. However, only in my entire life that I could remember, I've only seen faces three times in my dreams. And they were of people very dear to me that had recently passed away. And Steve was one of them. So one was my grandfather, who I was very close with, and he had passed. And then my mom's best friend, who we grew up with. So those were the two before Steve that had showed up, and I could see their face very vividly. So Steve told me very like directly and clearly in my dream that I have to write a book. And I was just shocked to see him out of nowhere. Like, it just
happened
so randomly. And here he is, his face in my dream. saying that I should write a book about how my first job working for him really impacted my life and my career. And so the next day, I couldn't believe it, how I remembered everything so vividly. And I just used those prophetic words and I started to write immediately after that
dream.
That's
great. I love that. I love that. So he mentored you, you know, once upon a time, and he continued to mentor you after he passed away. Perfect.
Big inspiration. And then all even the lessons learned, right? When I look back in hindsight about how he, you know, he prioritized his well-being, how he was just so, you know, passionate about his work, and he thought outside the box. Like, I love that campaign.
Right.
Outside the box. I mean, I'm always trying to do that myself. And that's what I did when I started Prananaz, because corporate wellness companies were not, you know, common back in 2010, 11, you know, so I really started, I created my own business in a very nascent market. And that to me was like very courageous and creative, because people were, you know, advising me otherwise, like, you're leaving the corporate world, you have a great job with great benefits and this and that, do what? Like, you don't know if that's going to work. And I said, but I'd rather try than be unfulfilled doing something with a great paycheck that's, you know, not going to fulfill like my soul. I want to serve people in a different way. So I did it. And I really felt like Steve was, you know, he was a big influence, whether he was there like physically, but he embodied that. And when I worked for him and I got to see it up close and personally, so I tried to take that with me. And I did when I started Prananaz.
I have to mention that I'm doing this Zoom Facebook Live radio show from my iPhone. And I think about how much phones have shifted over the last 15 years, 20 years. It's amazing what phones can do now. It's absolutely amazing. And I know that he had a lot of wonderful people working for him and with him on these projects. What was it about how he approached his job that allowed something to, you know, something so creative and so groundbreaking to get created?
I really have to say that his attention to detail and his well-being and his vision was all, you know, together, the combination of those. Because again, you know, he meditated daily. Meditation clears your mind and allows promote creativity. I mean, he was a genius already and creative and innovative, but that his meditation practice, I'm sure helped that. You know, he had time for himself. He had, you know, healthy relationships with his family, like strong relationships, like all, he really approached his well-being holistically. So he was very laser focused at work. So, and he loved what he did, right? So loving what you do, as he says, allows you to do great work. So all of that combined, he wasn't one of those, I mean, I work with a lot of executives who just like care, they just care about their work and working really long hours and using their lack of sleep as a badge of honor. I only need four or five hours of sleep, this and that. But, you know, imagine if they did get more sleep. Imagine if they meditated. Imagine if they took time to exercise a few times a week and do other things for their well-being, connect with their loved ones. Imagine what more they could do. I think Steve had cracked the code back then when meditation wasn't, you know, common. And, you know, self-care and corporate wellness, those weren't like common terms you heard back then. But he knew that taking care of himself would make him a better leader and innovative.
So one of the things you talk about in your book is the importance of play. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
That's something I learned also from Steve. He played at work with his prototypes. He loved, you know, again, loving what you do is really helps be carefree and creative and have fun while you're doing it. So then more solutions and things you would not normally see are able to flourish, right? It promotes that creativity. Uh-huh. And playing is, I mean, for the most part, just fun, right? We want to have fun. Sure. But not everybody does have fun with play. They are so stuck on work. I need to be productive. I don't have time for play. And so in my book and in my practice, I say to allocate play and recovery time. Play is another type of recovery, but more active, right? You're having fun. Recovery is more sleep and resting and, you know, relaxing. But play is another type where we are so focused and our attention and focus is so structured at work or doing other things when it's tied to an outcome of a specific goal. But when we play or when we're recovering, we're just being our true authentic self and in the moment, and there's no attachment to a specific outcome that's a goal. We're playing to have fun, you know?
I've always found it fascinating that whenever I go on vacation, something shifts in my business. Maybe suddenly I manifest something that I didn't expect, or I'll get an insight that will shift the direction I'm going in one way or another. And I remember my previous assistant, she said, you should go on vacation more often.
Exactly. We all should. It's so
yeah, we should.
For that reason, you come back rejuvenated, you know, energized. Uh-huh. If we're not taking that time to rejuvenate, I mean, just sleeping every night is a way to reboot every cell in your body, your brain, your mind and your body. Uh-huh. So that you can wake up with kind of a clean slate, hit the ground running, have the energy to do so. But when people are saying, oh, I only need 4 or 5 hours of sleep and not fully recovering every night, it starts taking a toll on your body. Now, I know some people like just they literally need less sleep. But when those people who need a bit more sleep, but they're running on less sleep, are trying to function long term, they're gonna hit burnout. I mean, I've seen it all the time. I've had clients who pass out from adrenal fatigue in the middle of meetings and have to be rushed to the hospital.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And you know, in Japan, there's a word for it called karoshi, which is death by overwork. They have coined a term that's really horrific in my mind.
It's very sad.
A word for death by overwork. That's how common it is in Japan.
Yeah. I worked over there for a month, and it was very fascinating to interact with people from that culture. They're just so into perfectionism. For instance, people, like I would have clients who would say, you know, that they don't speak any English, and then they'd have an experience that they were really excited about, and then they'd start speaking English because they were so excited they wanted to communicate it to. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, they speak English really well. And yet they didn't feel comfortable. If they didn't have that experience, they wouldn't have spoken to me in English because they were so concerned about getting it wrong.
Yeah, they have that filter and inhibitions up, right? When they're so excited, they just want to share. That's their authentic self coming out. Like, I don't care what I sound like. I'm so happy right now. I just want to share, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. What is prana nas?
Well,
besides a combination of prana and nas. Yeah.
Well, prana is one of my favorite words that I learned in yoga, which is Sanskrit for vital life and also breath and energy, vital energy, breath. And so to me, that is everything. You know, when prana runs through all of us, and it is really about helps you thrive. Like without prana, you're dead, right? Without your breath, without the vital energy. And so it flows through every person and being. However, that prana can get blocked by, you know, insecurities, fears, stress, fatigue, all of that. So when we keep our prana flowing freely, we're taking care of ourselves. We're able to show up energized and engaged and healthy in every aspect of our life. So prana to me is life. I mean, it is life force. And Nas is my name. So combining those two, first of all, you know, I try to embody prana and, you know, flowing prana. And I just think that optimizing your prana is so important in terms of living your best life and showing up as your best.
Right. And I call that vibrant living. And I, from an energetic perspective, I see that as having plenty of light flowing freely through the body and through the energy fields. so that you're open to all of life, that you're good at manifesting, you're open to the flow. And when somebody says, oh, that person's so full of light, on some level, they truly are. That vibrancy, that prana is very evident. You know it when you see it or feel it, you know?
Exactly. Full of life and light.
So before we go any further, I want to make sure our listeners and viewers know how they can connect with you and what it is you offer.
You can connect with me through my corporate wellness site, pranaz.com, pranaz.com, for corporate wellness programs and executive coaching. And also my personal website where you can find my book is nazbeheshti.com, nazbeheshti.com. And my book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the major retailers. And I'm also on social media, on all the major social media sites as Naz Beheshti, and also Naz Beheshti Speaker on Facebook.
Yeah, and Naz Beheshti is, you know, it is a little complicated to spell, but there's only going to be one of you out there.
Actually more Nazes than I thought, but yes, Naz Beheshti is, I think there's just one as of now. There is one other that's spelled a little bit differently, because my full name is Nazanin, and there is a Nazanin Beheshti who actually I know, who's on also Facebook. So,
oh my goodness,
also not related, so it's interesting.
Oh, that's really interesting. So if we're going to be living fully with plenty of prana, what are some of the things we should do on a daily basis in order to achieve that?
Well, first I would say to do what you love to do, whatever that means for you, but exercising, movement is really important to, you know, get your endorphins going. And like, when you're in a state of any type of state that you don't want to be, the easiest way to shift that state is to move your body, even if it's not like a full exercise routine or like hour, just a few minutes of movement would just do wonders. So moving your body, I highly, highly recommend a mindfulness practice, whatever, you know, type of meditation or a walking, you know, mindfulness practice. Some people enjoy running, any type of mindfulness practice that makes you present and you're just really focused on the moment, whether it's your breath, your movement, a thought, a mantra.
Right.
And then I also would encourage you to do mindful self-check-ins, which I love to do, which is just periodically through the day, check in with yourself and just ask yourself a bunch of rapid fire questions like, am I breathing? Am I thirsty? I keep this big glass of water on my desk. I'm always drinking water. How's my posture? Am I hunched over? Am I sitting up straight? You know, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? And just like checking in to all your senses so that you're fully aware of your state, your current state. And then your subjective state allows you to then move forward and make a better choice if you want, or just makes you aware of how you are, and you could track that throughout the day.
I've got a friend who's got an app that sort of goes off randomly every hour that she takes as a cue to breathe deeply. So, you know, there are ways that we can play with our technology in order to remind us to do these things.
Yeah, there's an app. There's an Apple watch that tells you to like get up and move. You know, there's so many notifications you can get to do that. And I highly encourage that, because if not, you can get stuck kind of in whatever you're doing, and so much time can go by. You're not even aware of your breath, if you're thirsty, if you're hungry, anything, because you're just so focused on the task at hand. And then lastly, I mean, there's so many, I have over 80 in my book, but I'm just picking out the things that I do every day, is have a morning routine. So have some time, if you can, first thing in the morning for yourself to do whatever that is that makes you happy and feel good. And so for me, I use the RPM method, which is rise, pee, meditate, followed by movement. So I do that every single day, and I just feel amazing, because no matter what happens after that in the day, good, bad, whatever it is, I feel good that I started my day the way I wanted to, instead of just reacting to my emails and having my calendar kind of run me. I run my day. I take charge of my day.
Do you have one, like a 1 minute final message for our viewers and listeners today?
It would be really to pause, take a deep breath, and choose something that makes you really happy that you want to do that you haven't been doing because you haven't had time or you just haven't gotten to it, and start doing that and put it in your calendar, block off the time and start with one small thing that you want to incorporate that is for your own self-care, and commit to that one thing daily or every other day, whatever works for your schedule, but just do it. That is the first step, is to pause, breathe, choose that one thing. And then there you can build. And there's over 80 in my book that you can choose from. And really just take charge of your life and promote yourself to become the CEO of your well-being.
That's great. Naz, I want to thank you for sharing your message here today and for inspiring our listeners and viewers. Thank you
so much for having me, Christine. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah. And I want to thank all of our listeners and viewers for joining us here today. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. If you'd like to empower yourself to step further into your vibration of change, please visit my website at christineupchurch.com, where you can learn more about my insights, upcoming events, and private sessions.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.